Welcome to the Millionaire Secrets Podcast, where the most successful people in the world share their secrets to help you create the awesome life you desire. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Jeff Lerner here for another episode of Millionaire Secrets. Excited to be with you, as always, bringing you the secrets of the millionaires, billionaires, and gazillionaires. And we are joined by one such human today, Mr. David Schloss. He is the founder of Convert ROI, which is a very successful digital ads management company that I know well. I know personally from long before this podcast even existed. Dave is just a super sharp guy, manages over $30 million a year in Facebook and Instagram ad spend. So, you know, sees a thing or two, and we're excited to have him on the show today. David, welcome to Millionaire Secrets.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. And it's nice. You know, I obviously have a person who books these episodes for me, these interviews, and it's cool. You know, we reach out to all kinds of interesting people, but every now and then I get to just talk to one of my friends.
So, yeah.
This will be a lot of fun. We go a ways back. I've seen your agency grow and thrive. You've seen my education company grow and thrive. So I think we have a lot of shared context here. But I see what I didn't know until I actually got my hands on your official bio, that you've actually been doing this since 2007.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I got started in late 2008. And I would say it's relatively infrequent that I talk to people who've been doing digital marketing longer than me. Although I did talk to John Benson several weeks ago, who got started in like 1995.
Yeah, that's OG level. Like I can't compete with that. So yeah.
He is full OG, right? But anyway, 2007, man, you've got some history. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in this whole craziness.
Yeah, I started more out of necessity than out of joy and entertainment and the love of the game. A lot of what I did when I first started in marketing was, you know, I was in college. So I was a freshman in college when I sort of fell onto online marketing, which back then Facebook was brand new, not just to, you know, the advertising side, the whole world. It was still very new. And the main platforms for advertising were Google, Yahoo, MSN, not Bing, MSN.
MSN,
and
right.
You know, you still had AOL and a variety of other things. And so it was traditional PPC. SEO was starting to boom back then. And if you were learning social ads, you were in a wasteland. There wasn't a lot of opportunity.
Because it was like MySpace and Friendster, right?
MySpace, Friendster, Facebook. And then like a couple of years after that was like Twitter came along, and then LinkedIn started you know, trying some things, and YouTube. Actually, YouTube ads have actually been out for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. Most people didn't even know this until a couple of years ago. So it kind of gives you an idea. Like, there weren't a lot of opportunities for social ads. And I did it mainly because, one, I saw the opportunity. I was already on Facebook all the time back then because a lot of college kids were on it and sharing things. And it's what we'd be
on. Was it, in 2007, had Facebook gone to the full market, or was it still only for college kids?
It was primarily college kids, graduates, and maybe, you know, some people in their later 20s who maybe got introduced to it once they left college.
There was a time you had to have a college email address to sign up for Facebook, but that was pre-2007, right?
Yeah. And when I entered into the ecosystem, I had to use my University of Florida email just to get in. So,
okay. Wow. Yeah.
It tells you how long I've been on the platform. When they opened it up to the public, that's when the ad platform evolved as well, because more people joined in. Right. So I was just going down the rabbit hole of, how do I make money online? It was literally what I typed in. How do I make money online? And I fell upon what seemed like an entire day's worth of reading, because I did not pay attention in class that day. I was just reading article after article or blog post after blog post about, you know, blogging, paid blogging at the time was huge. And then, you know, doing things with advertising and doing client work and SEO and web dev and web design. I was learning everything, right? So within the first year, I was doing WordPress design. Like, I figured out how to build WordPress sites. I knew how to do affiliate sites, rank them, run some ads to them. Like, basically the arbitrage model of sending traffic, get AdSense clicks. I figured out how to do that in my first year. And I was just duplicating those efforts over and over. But while learning all those skill sets, I took on clients because I found it to be quite easy for me. I was already a great talker in a sense of I know how to communicate with people. I just didn't know how to sell back then. So if someone decided to work with me, it was merely just because they liked me. It wasn't because I sold them on the idea of why they need this, which I learned later down the road. But I took that money and I basically would repurpose it into more learning, right? So it's like Frank Kern's Mass Control came out, bought it. Butterfly Marketing, Mike Filsaim, bought it. You know, all basically all the OGs, right? Dice had his stuff. Anik has been around forever. Like a lot of these guys have been around for so long that I was just consuming and consuming, but I was applying it too. So even if I made $1,000 in a month, I'd flip it and buy some stuff, learn more, and just rinse and repeat. So my entire college life for 4 straight years was, you know, doing freelance stuff, taking on some local clients. I'd have like a lawyer, a realtor, a bike shop ranking their sites, but I was still learning Facebook ads because it was so new. There wasn't a lot of targeting options. If a bike shop in Gainesville, Florida wanted more customers, I couldn't drill it down to people who already rode bikes. You just couldn't do that back then.
Right.
Just, you know, hey, everyone in the US who's 18 to 25 and men or women, that's it. Like there wasn't a lot of opportunity there. So I had to wait for the evolution of the platform while still learning other things, because I figured, hey, at some point this is going to kick off and maybe I can make something from it. So I was looking years down the road, but I would still do SEO and web design tasks for people because it was paying the bills.
So early on, if I'm hearing you right, you're saying that you could kind of sense that Facebook was still in this very like early nascent stage where they weren't nearly taking advantage of all that they would ultimately have to leverage with all the data and the targeting. And so you just kind of bided your time, but very early. I mean, and I want to make sure I'm understanding you right. You just kind of had this early sense that ultimately Facebook would be the place.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, MySpace got bought out by Fox at the time or whoever owns Fox now. Right. So that big media conglomerate bought MySpace. And that was an indication for me that social networks are just going to start popping up left and right.
Yeah.
Which when Facebook came to be, I'm like, oh, this Zuckerberg guy seems to have a vision. So I'm going to just see what happens there. Cause every college kid that I knew at the time, including myself, was on the platform. Mm-hmm. Then Twitter came out of nowhere and I found myself on Twitter and Facebook, and then YouTube was already around, but I didn't know anyone who was actively putting a lot of content out on YouTube, but I did know that the ones that were benefiting quite a bit. This is when their monetization program finally came out and people were making 6 figures a year off YouTube, not even 7-8 figures yet. We're just talking 100 grand a year type of thing. And so I started to notice that these networks started to monetize and grow fast. And I'm like, they're all being classified as social networks. There's something here, right? And of course there were, you know, LinkedIn came along. It was purely job related, but I'm like, well, this is basically a network for jobs, right? So it just kept evolving into more stuff. And if you think about it, like the core ones are still around. You still got Facebook, still got Twitter and YouTube, but then like Pinterest came around. And Snapchat came around. It had its highs and its lows right now. And then you have TikTok and all that. But which ones are still around? You still got Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Like the core four, right? They're still there.
Yeah.
And so I knew that when I joined those four primary platforms, I'm like, if I just stick with these, even if I'm there till they die off, it's at least 5 to 10 years before they're going to die. Like that was my thought. Milk it till they die and just see what happens. I didn't think I'd be doing it for over 10 years. I thought maybe I'd have a 5-year span, make my money, figure something else out. It's been over 10 years. All of them have been around for over 10 years. So I was just thinking there's something to this. And then when they all started to create ad platforms, you know, hey, you can run ads on LinkedIn, you can run ads on YouTube. And I was like, okay, now we're here to stay for a little bit because they're all making money off ads.
Right.
And then that's when I was like, okay, now is the time. The real boom that I saw with Facebook and then Instagram that came along when they bought Instagram was around 2013, was when everyone started running Teespring ads, Teespring or any apparel based stuff. And they were creating UIDs, scraping data and selling stuff to these people. That's when I noticed like, oh, people are making multiple 6 figures a year selling shirts and socks and mugs. People are still doing that now. But back then no one was really doing it. So if I wanted to sell a shirt to everyone named Jeff, I would scrape everyone named Jeff and run a shirt to all those guys and just be like, hey, buy the shirt, Jeff. You know, it's like just simple and it would work until Facebook caught on. But that was like a 2-year span of just all these money-making opportunities with Facebook because they were finally evolving their platform to the point where They wanted e-commerce sellers. They wanted to, you know, have people promote their local business or their product or service, like webinars. My first webinar that I promoted through ads was back in like 2011, when people were like, what's a webinar? Like, they were still trying to figure out what a webinar is and what it can do. I was already promoting one, you know, just promoting an opt-in page, which wasn't built on ClickFunnels. It was built on Optimized Press or WordPress. And then you'd have to filter them into GoToWebinar, right? So all these things that are now commonplace, I would say, they're a part of our process. We're so new or just unfamiliar back then that it was like, if you're running ads to this stuff and you can get it to work, it's going to turn into something. And that's naturally what I saw. You know, I would say probably the golden era for a lot of people was like 2015 to 2018. You saw coaches come out of nowhere. You saw Shopify integrate with Facebook and people were making millions of dollars with Shopify even back then. That's when I was like, oh, I'm onto something now. Like, this is the perfect chance for me to really like dive in head first. So I already went 7-8 years before the real boom happened. And then that's when the agency really started to take off.
So I'm curious, you know, you've got like marginal OG status, you know, 2007. You've been at it so much longer than most people. I mean, I know that my mission right now is to like go out there and teach people about the opportunities of the new economy, which are all, they're all really inflected by the internet, whether they're overtly digital opportunities like a Shopify store or like an affiliate blog, or even like if you're in real estate now, the internet is still largely going to inform and drive your real estate strategy, right? I mean, it's all digital now, even if it's not. So that's my mission. But and from that vantage point, I see actually, even though it's like so painfully obvious to you and me, because it's like, we've been doing this for like 12 or 13 or 14 years, however long. It's like, well, this is our world. We live, eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. It's actually shockingly new still to the vast majority of people, especially in COVID has kind of reoriented people's awareness of like the digital economy. But I'm curious, you know, you're talking about like, you know, the heyday or the prime, the sweet spot kind of, do you feel like the opportunity is bigger or smaller or just different for someone getting started in the digital world now versus any time in the last, you know, 15 years?
I'd say it's different, right? So when I talk about like the golden era or like the boom of Facebook, which if you combine those together is like 2013 to 2018, it was just like everyone was throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks, right? And the reason why I mention that is because, you know, you had the evolution of business manager, ad agencies tagging on to ad accounts and creating lots of ad accounts and running ads. Then you had the Shopify integration, WooCommerce, WordPress integration with Facebook, the universal pixel. Back then it used to be individual conversion events versus this big universal pixel they have now. So all these things came to be over a 5-year stretch. So when you are running ads during that time period, like if you started in 2013, you got all the shortcuts, all the stuff that I was waiting for. For 6 years, it was like one after another, boom, 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 boom. And it was making life easy for me. So if you're someone who is starting ads now, you have all the shortcuts. You might look at it as, oh my God, there's too much information. It's an overabundance of stuff. I look at it as I just shortened the length of time I have to learn these things and also to deploy it. Because ads used to take an hour, 2 hours for one individual person. Now I could deploy an entire campaign in 15 minutes if I, you know, just do some research, get a campaign going, follow the steps and deploy it. 15 minutes, right? It's super quick. These things didn't exist back then. So if you're starting now, I actually see it as the opportunity for you to learn something that most people back then would have had to spend hours and hours and hours to figure out. You actually can do it in less than an hour. That's huge.
Yeah. And it's not even just on the ad side. I mean, it's what is the ad link to? You know, you mentioned Optimized Press and WordPress. I know when I got started, I was building sites in Dreamweaver.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
I mean, you know, ClickFunnels, Lead Pages, Samcart, Kartra, Kajabi, you know, DropFunnels, depending on what you're trying to do. Like it's just gotten so insanely easy. Yeah. To guys like you and me who remember what it was like. You know, literally like, you know, it's the difference between like, I don't know, fighting a battle with a machine gun and fighting a battle with like a bayonet. It's just like, it was brutal back then. Mm-hmm. But I'm so, okay. So then extend that and say, okay, well, the barrier to entry has effectively been lowered so much.
Yes.
The platforms have made building ad campaigns easier. The other platforms have made launching sites and sales funnels easier. Thus, there's a lot more people that are going, oh, hey, I could do this. I don't have to like learn code. I don't have to, you know, hire even just the cost. I mean, you can go on Fiverr now and have a decent website built for a couple $100. It used to be like $5,000 or $10,000
just
to have a website built, right? So has that lowered barrier to entry, in your opinion, resulted in a saturated opportunity that's not the same for people? And I mean, you I'm sure can hear what I'm doing, which is I'm trying to address the objections of the listeners who are going, oh, well, this guy was around during the golden era, but it can't be the same for me. Not to sway your answer, but you know where I'm coming from.
But it is what it is, right? So here's the thing. I don't look at it as saturation. I look at it as there's a shift in creativity in the marketplace. Here's what I mean. So there's a different direction, right? The barrier of entry is lower, thus more competition arises, which also means that because the barrier of entry is lower and there's a lot of newbies, that means those of us who are learning quickly or testing things effectively and more aggressively are able to find what it is that grabs people's attention faster. Because that's the name of the game. It's attention, right? So if you're learning about various strategies from different ad buyers like myself and a lot of other people, you'll notice that a lot of us have different strategy of how we deploy something, how we write copy, how we create images, how we record video. Because at the end of the day, there's tens of thousands of realtors. There's, or even hundreds of thousands at this point. How is it that there could be 10 realtors in Miami, Florida running ads all at the same time, and yet they can all get clients to sell their home? Well, because they all have a unique proposition, right? They all have their way of reading something off of a script or saying something on video, or their personality might align with certain people, men and women. So it's not that it's saturated. It's that you have to find the person or a group of people that align with your personality, how you deliver the message, and whether or not they like you. Because that's really the main thing. And you know this. We get on camera, automatically we could polarize people away from our message. It's like, hey, if this isn't for you, go away, right? So we've already cut out the people we know aren't going to listen. But at the same time, when I deploy my videos and I say things a certain way, some other person can literally say exactly what I said verbatim, but yet I might get a better attraction rate to what it is that I'm putting out there because people like how I speak, or they might like my teaching style, or they might like just the way that I am on camera and how I smile a certain way. And that's what gets them to pay attention.
Or you're targeting a group that's just more relevant to you than the other guy, right?
Exactly.
Like, so for me, I target 40 plus.
That's right.
Generally, and who I target online, because I'm a 41-year-old dad, you know.
And I start as low as 22 because I'm turning 32 and not that far from now. And the thing is,
you got a baby face.
I do. Yeah. And here's the thing: a lot of people still think I'm in my early 20s. They've been saying I'm in my early 20s since I was 18, right? So that hasn't changed. And so because of that, I often start at a lower age group, and I oftentimes will just filter those people out that may not be able to afford what it is that I do. Because I do work with quite a few 20-somethings who are multi-millionaires, and you would never know, right? I just happen to run their ads. And so, you know, that's the thing that I see is, you know, golf is saturated to some people. It's like, oh, everyone's running golf stuff. Well, how come there's more driver companies out now? How come there's more companies creating putters, and yet they're thriving? Well, because online, they're doing things differently than Callaway and all these other companies that have been around for ages, and they're showcasing the technology behind the club and what they're doing for golfers at a younger age. They're bringing people in their teens and in their 20s to play golf when most people thought that golf didn't start till you were in your 50s or you're retired, right? So you could see there's a dynamic that you're able to shift in the message, who you're bringing it to, and whether or not it's affordable. And that's all up to you to not just digest, but also to break it down for people, like what you're doing with me, right? Where you're like, this is the common objection. How do we fix that, right? And that's essentially what it is. You're just bringing your own unique spin to it.
Yeah, I have an absolute steadfast conviction that saturation is just validation. I mean, that's really, you know, it's actually when the competition is really thin, I think in a lot of ways it's harder because, like, to your point, you can't test and get feedback as quickly. Mm-hmm. You can't hack as many other people. You can't go online and go, let me find 100 people that are being successful and just reverse engineer what they're doing, because they're harder. There's fewer and farther between. And I just know what a psychological obstacle it is for so many people to see all these stories and go, oh, there's not room for me. You mentioned realtors. I actually looked it up while you were talking. There's over 2 million active real estate licenses in the country, and 1.4 of them are members of the, you know, NAR, the National Association of Realtors. 1.4 million realtors, over 2 million real estate licenses in just the United States. Is it reasonable then to suggest that there's no money left to be made in real estate?
There's quite a bit. Of course not.
That'd be nonsense. I have a buddy I just interviewed on the show. His episode's coming out in a few weeks. Who's the arguably the fastest growing residential real estate team in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He's exploded from zero to, you know, seven figures plus in less than 3 years. I mean, there's huge opportunity, but to your point, you have to be, I mean, I think you just have to be good.
Yeah,
it's persistence. You know what you do, that's the non-negotiable. I think that people, I'm curious if you think I'm being too harsh when I say this. I think that people that are saying the market is too crowded, what they're really saying is, I'm scared to be good enough.
Oh, for sure. Oh, 100%. So keep in mind, there's three things that I tell people all the time when they go into any business opportunity. It's practice, patience, and persistence. That's it. Mm-hmm. Practice your craft over and over and over. You talk about the reps. You talk about the 10,000 hours. You know, everyone's heard that. I know for a fact I've done 10,000 hours multiple times. You know, when we're talking about just Facebook, right? And Instagram and a variety of other things. But then you also have the reps of deploying ads. I don't know how many ads I've deployed. It's hundreds of thousands. I know that for sure. Okay. You don't spend $100 million in your career unless you've done possibly 1 million ads. Right. Possibly. Right. So reps, constantly doing this over and over, failing a lot. Just keep going until you have a system. But then there's the patience part. Patience of getting the result, patience of the business finally scaling to a point where you're happy, whether it's six figures or seven figures or eight figures. It's like, yes, you have to do the work. You're going to grind and get aggressive and just do these things to get to the point where you want to be, but you still have to be patient with it. Not many people get $1 million in their first year. I know plenty of people who don't. It took them 5, 6, 7 years. Now you see people do it in 12 months and you're like, man, I didn't have the tools that they have to get there. I had to do it, like you said, build things in Dreamweaver, host them up on a server through a file transfer system, and wait. You know, like all that stuff that we didn't have. If you made $1 million in a launch, you were a genius and a god. Now people do it and you're like, cool, man, go do it again. Like there's no feeling behind it anymore. So that also tells you that, well, one, they've probably done this multiple times. There's reps behind it and it's not unique anymore. So now it's like, what else can you do? Right. But they're still patient with the result. But then the persistence, it's just keep going, right? Oh, I failed. Keep going. Oh, I did great with this. Awesome. Keep going, right? Because you have to continually put in the work until, I mean, in my case, I've done the work so much that if you say, hey, who do you recommend for ads? There's a very real possibility I'm in that conversation.
Yeah.
Every time. And I'm not saying that to be overly confident or cocky. It's the truth because I've done the work. And so by putting out the case studies and just showcasing the results from people and being like, this is what we do over and over and over. At some point, your name also gets out there, right? And you've seen it too with what you do. Sold businesses. You got the plaques on the wall that most people wish they could have. I don't have one of those. I know I've made people that much money. I don't even have one of those, right? So it just shows that if you do those three things, you know, practice, patience, persistence, like you can get exactly what you're looking for. But people just quit too soon. They just quit. In the first year, they're like, oh, I didn't make $100,000. I guess I suck. No, stop comparing yourself. You're not these other people. You are you. You are your own unique individual. The way you do things is different from everyone else. Period. You just might take a little longer. No big deal.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I do a lot of, I guess you'd call it motivation, or I try to give people stamina. Like, yeah. Like, come on, man. Like, be realistic here. It's been 3 months. What? How well were you walking at 3 months old?
I mean, I can tell you my kid wasn't walking at all. He wasn't even crawling.
So, Yeah. I mean, I think people come on the internet and especially in the world we live in right now. Look, I'm recording this in fall 2020. We're here. You know, these shows live forever. So somebody may be seeing it 2 years from now, but In fall 2020, the world needs digital business.
Yep.
Badly. Because yep. there's a small group of us that have essentially been the beneficiaries of the massive transfer of attention onto the internet. And we thought there was a lot of attention on the internet before COVID. But I mean, now we're seeing what happens when the world fully flips to digital.
Yeah.
And there's like, those of us that are like, we get it, we got it. This is, we're not showing up going, oh, this looks like a cool party. How can I get in on it? We're like, yo, we've been here for years telling the world that this was the future. And now everybody's like, oh, I want in. And I don't begrudge that. Digital economy is $3.5 trillion now. Like it's not, we're talking about, it's bigger than any country in the world. You know, as many millionaires as can be made in the United States is like what I think the GDP of the United States is like over 10 trillion or something. But I mean, if you think about how many millionaires there are, there's 1700 new millionaires every day in the United States.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's room for 100, 200, 500 new millionaires every day on the internet. I don't know what the number is. I don't, you know, I'm doing some clunky math here, but like, come on, man. I just want to be one of them.
Yeah.
I had my day already. And even on that day, I was only one. Tomorrow, 500 new millionaires. Step right up. If you're listening to this, step right up. Don't wait. What are you going to wait 5 years and go, man, I wish I'd been on that train. You know, like we're here. But to David's point, it's gonna take time. I mean, you've been doing it since 2007, but I mean, you see people, like, do you help people that are getting started? Do they reach out to you and say, hey, I'm just, so like, do you experience this frustration that I can't help but not talk about sometimes, which is like new people with unreasonable mm-hmm. expectations that want it to happen really fast just because the internet is thought of as a fast medium?
Yeah. Well, it's being portrayed as fast because you have these people who only talk about their results, but they don't tell you how long it took for them to get there.
Right.
They see the overnight success of like a product going from zero to a million, but they don't know the person's been doing this for 6 years and they finally had something pop off.
Right.
So let's put this in perspective. Okay. This will now be my fourth election on a social network.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, that's 08, 12, 16, 20.
Yeah.
Two downturns in the economy, 08 this year.
Yeah.
Right. First pandemic. Right. So I've already seen first one, hopefully not again. But also I've noticed what happens in the social economy and then the economy. Social economy is, you know, hey, millions and tens of millions, and no one ever says billions online because by then you're doing your own thing. But right. just millions and tens of millions, big deals here, course launch there, you know, messengers making 20 grand, but you're just seeing numbers all day, or you're seeing politics, or you're seeing products to buy, right? So you're in this ecosystem of awesome, if that's what you want, or you have pure negativity. It just depends on what direction you want to go, but that's all they see. So it gets ingrained in their brain that this is how things are for everybody,
yeah.
right? You go in the, I don't want to mention the group, but we all know what the group is. It has 200,000 people. It represents the plaques on the wall. And sometimes you go in there and you realize there's a lot of people in there just drowning others in their successes, but they don't talk about the failures. Thus, everyone in there believes that everything's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the reason why I mentioned four elections, two downturns and all that, I mean, I've already been through what happens when the economy out there takes a massive dump and how it affects my business. It's already happened. I almost went broke twice. I almost filed bankruptcy one of those times. I just noticed when things shift over there, they shift here too. And I have to know how to get around them. Right. And I think just a lot of newbies, and I know this because I get hit up by at least one a day at this point, whether it's on Instagram or Facebook, asking me if I can mentor them on how to make money online. And you know me, I don't put anything out there about money ever. But yeah. yet somehow people come to me asking because they see, well, let's just call it what it is. They see my authority, or the fact that I have verification on multiple platforms, or that people never respond negatively to me. Because everyone seems to be on the same page with me. They're like, hey, this guy's done it forever. Like, I recommend him. So they see that and then they just assume, oh, he must be just killing it. I'd love to learn from this guy. We all know a bunch of other people who are doing way bigger numbers than me who would probably be happy to mentor them, but they came to me for a reason. And I think they just like the fact that I'm even keel in the background doing my thing and people like me. So they want to know how they can build that too. They don't know the 13 years of doing this. They only know about, I put up a post the other day and 300 people responded to it. And they're like, wow, that, everyone seems to like this guy. I want to be just like him. And that's all they see. Right. And I think that's a lot of people's portrayal of business online too. I throw up a Shopify store, I put up an ad, I get sales, everything's awesome. I post about it in a group and people want to pay me for coaching.
Yeah.
That's what they see. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. And if people tell you it does work that way, it doesn't. It takes time. I didn't sign my first coaching student, and it was out of an, it was a pure accident. I signed a coaching student to learn ads in my eighth year of running ads. My eighth year. Not my first or second year, not my fourth year, my eighth year. So when I give them what works, it's after 8 years of testing, not after a strategy that worked for 6 months and now I'm just flipping it to make more money. Because there's a lot of people out there doing that right now. So it just shows, yeah, nothing wrong with reaching out for a mentor. My mentor was, he was free. I reached out to him and I didn't even, and did an exchange. I'll help you with some ad stuff in exchange for you just helping me get my life in order. And it worked out. I made the guy a lot of money. He got my shit in order. Right? It was a lot of, it was an even exchange. But I offered something to him. I didn't just ask him, can you be my mentor? And that was it. And that's how a lot of people are approaching this business world. This person's doing great. I'm going to ask them for time to pick their brain. Hate that. I hate the phrase, but that's what they say. I need 15 minutes. I'd like to get coffee. You name it. And there's nothing of value exchanged. It's just, can you help me? And that's it. And I don't know. I think that's why a lot of people get stuck. They have to always ask, but they never try to take the action on their own. I'm a self-starter. I learned ads by myself. Mm-hmm. So I went after there. I went after it, did it first, found my holes and where I needed to jump through things and said, oh, I need some help here. Then I went and got the help. And that's probably why things moved a little quicker for me, was because I just noticed where my weak points were and where my strong suits were. And I just focused on the strong suits and hired out or got help on the weak stuff. And then that's when things started to progress.
You know, it's interesting you talk. Well, first of all, I just have to say, yes, picking my brain, I don't want any part of my body picked. Thank you very much.
Yes.
That's not an attractive image. I don't know how it became a thing that was like so common and acceptable to ask for. Oh, let me, it's like if somebody said, oh, can I come pick your elbow?
Yeah. It's like, no, man. Like,
no.
Get away from me.
Yeah. I'm not a meth head. I don't picking in my life. Anyways, to your point about the time, you know, when people, one of the biggest criticisms and also the biggest adulations that I get in my company Entre is that when people come in, I immediately launch into a conversation about how to be a successful entrepreneur. I don't talk about how to place a Facebook ad.
Right. The tactical stuff.
Yeah. Because dude, there's free YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
That'll teach you. Now, the problem with free YouTube videos is they'll teach you too much tactical stuff. And sometimes the sources are suspect and it's not always the right tactical stuff. But really, theoretically, if you know how to think through the problem or think through the mechanics of building online funnels and creating ads and doing all the things that we do, you can go sort of strategically find the right information about how to do each component of it. But again, you got to have kind of a sense of a discernment about like what's good and what isn't, who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't. But man, being an entrepreneur, you know, these conversations are so fun for me because my thinking evolves through these conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done this is probably like episode number 90 or so that I've recorded of my show here. And I look at the world differently than I did when I started. You know, it's not, I think the first student of everyone that comes on the show. And what I've basically decided now, after having so many people come on the show, and to a man and woman, they have these stories of like I was down or I was challenged or I was frustrated or I was stuck or I was broke or I was, you know, whatever. And I started embracing the digital economy and all different angles and pathways. and I came out the other side and now my life is X, Y, Z. It's better. I have money. I have choice. I have opportunity. I have freedom of location, like whatever, right? People kind of find their pot of gold at the end of the online rainbow. And I've interviewed 90 of you guys now. And I've only been doing this show for like 4 or 5 months. So when I've been doing this for 5 years and I look at our line of people that I have on my schedule, it's not going to let up. Like 5 years from now, I will have interviewed, I don't know, 1,500, 2,000 people that are all going to, it's just this endless procession of the same story with different variables and different characters, right? Mm-hmm. I was stuck. I was frustrated. Then I went online, the digital economy. I learned the right skills. And now I have the life I always wanted, right?
Yep.
There's so many. It's not like this thing where people are like, well, I found one success story, but do they have any testimonials? And has anybody else done it? Take it from the guy who interviews these people for, you know, as a part of his business now. There are thousands and thousands. I could do this show every day for my whole life and I wouldn't have interviewed everyone. Mm-hmm. So I have actually reached a point where I think that being a digital entrepreneur is less risky than having a job.
Yeah.
Because
potential is a lot higher.
You have more upside potential and you have so much more control over your future.
Yeah.
You know, you have a job and you can ascend so much faster.
True. I wouldn't even say it's control. It's command.
Okay.
So here's why I say that. Control and command, they're very similar, but command is like, I'm making the decision and I do this item. Control often feels sort of like, I need to control the situation. It's almost like a freak out moment, right? Often right. Most people use control when things aren't going right, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh man, clients aren't happy. Things are falling apart. Accounts are getting shut down. I need to control the situation.
Right.
When we're talking about putting your right, you know, putting the right foot forward and the left foot and just keep moving along and creating progress, I'm commanding items to go. I'm moving forward progress. And so that's the way I look at it. Because I had a 9-to-5 for a year and a half when shit hit the fan. I had to get a job temporarily. Yes, I got a job temporarily. So what? Had to put food on the table and I had to have some shelter.
Oh, you're a fraud, man.
Oh,
what? You failed. Yeah. And now you're just lying to everyone about what's possible.
Yeah, and I also went to college. So I guess that's a scam too, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of things that...
Oh, you sucker.
So, you know, that there's a lot of things that go into that, right? And, you know, hey, I had the $40K in debt, paid it off. You know, so there's a lot of things that go into that. But look, at the end of the day, we all have different journeys. But we all end up having that same story of I hit a rock bottom, overcame it, built what I was looking for. Some people had rock bottom multiple times, right? We had it 2 or 3 times to figure things out. Maybe we had to have a divorce. Maybe we had to lose a partner that we thought was going to be with us forever. Maybe we had to lose a business partner or a business fall apart or get sued or whatever. Everyone has that same moment of holy shit. And then everything works after that, mm-hmm. right? And so you are right where it's like, hey, everyone's story is very similar. There's always a moment where it's like, well, I was here and then I got even lower than that. And then boom, everything took off. We're all using very similar tactics. We use Facebook ads. We use YouTube ads. We use all the same networks. Mm-hmm. Our strategies may be different ever so slightly. Like you said, you could find stuff on YouTube and that's true. The only reason why someone might buy my course versus going on YouTube and watching something for free is it's possible that my teaching style clicks in their brain a lot faster.
Right.
The only thing. So they might be willing to pay.
And they're going to save a lot of time not having to hunt and search for good information.
Who's good versus who's not. Do I learn from this guy versus that guy or this woman versus that woman? No, it's like, this is my person, right? So at the end of the day, we're all on the journey together. Barrier of entry is lower. It's all of us are just taking our time and tackling things differently, right? I'm going the Facebook route. Someone else will go the YouTube route. We'll eventually meet together and I'll want to go YouTube. He'll go Facebook. I'm running a service. This person's running a product. Like it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same. It's just, we stuck with it. That's really what it is. We just kept going. You've built multiple businesses successfully. You've sold, you know, your variation of them. I've burned down more businesses than I've had successfully run. And yet the ones that I'm running now have been running for a long time. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just a part of the game. I just think most people don't want to play that game. They just want to do one thing and they want to just stick with that one thing and hope that it works in the first year. And that's it, which is a job. What they really want is structure. And we build our own structure and it might take time to build structure because you have to have a team and have the right technology in place to make things a little simpler. so on and so forth. They don't want to do that. They just want to walk into a done-for-you business or a business in a box and hope that everything just works, which is basically a job. So what they're doing is just recreating the 9-to-5 environment. And hey, there's nothing wrong with that. We all need people to send our emails and write our content and figure out our ads. But then there's people like us who are the visionaries that sometimes need to sit back and look at the landscape and go, what is it that I actually want to focus on? What do I want to grow? What do I want to cut back? Like, we have to have time to think. And if all we're doing is just being the button pusher, can't do that, right? So there's a whole process to this, right? It's not just deploying an ad and making $1 million. There's a lot of other stuff you got to do in between. And I don't think a lot of people, I mean, you are doing this, are not talking about the in between. You are. You're saying once you do that, you got to do
this. That's all I talk about. That's, people get annoyed at me because I won't tell them, like, oh yeah, by the way, here's how you, here's the option you select to make a YouTube pre-roll ad.
Right. Right.
That's like not freaking interesting to me. It's in the Google help desk. Like, just go to Google and Google how to launch a pre-roll ad on YouTube. And YouTube themselves will teach you how to, you don't need me to teach you how to do that. You don't need David to teach you how to do that. It's all the intangibles. It's all the between the lines stuff that, by the way, doesn't just equip you to be able to run a business. I love that you use that word command. Mm-hmm. Like, badass, effective people are commanding people.
Yeah.
Don't you, if you're listening to this, like, you're either of two schools. You, like, you've got the spark and you're like, I'm listening to this because I want to learn. I want that life. Or you don't. And I'm asking you, like, don't you want command in your life? Our job as a provider is going to be by far, I say our job, whatever we do to provide, mm-hmm. is going to be by far the single biggest investment of time in our life. You're going to spend way more time with your work than you do with your wife or your husband or your kids if you're a provider.
Yeah.
Even me, I literally could completely stop all this nonsense, but I won't. I'm a better dad to my kids because I'm not always with my kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing something that's meaningful and has impact in the world to show them what life can look like, right? And so I say this to people, like, what we're talking about is, to your point, it's about how to have command in your life. Oh, and by the way, once you do that, you'll be able to build a business. You'll be able to control your income. You'll be able to work as hard as you want to make as much as you want. Like, for you, what's your fee structure, if you don't mind me asking? Like, when you board a new client, what do you actually charge them?
Yeah, so there's two different ways. We have hybrid packages, which are like a base retainer plus percentage of something. Let's just say percentage of spend or percentage of profit.
Right.
The greatest deals of all time. Then you have the people who just pay a flat retainer. As an example, my lowest package is $2,500 a month. Mm-hmm. $2,500 a month. And you have to be spending at least $6,000 to as high as, let's say, $18,000 a month. Now, a lot of people are probably going, what? That's a lot. No, it's not.
That's like $200 to $600 a day.
But that's it. Yeah. And that's not a lot. I know people who, if they just cut back on their weekend spend, would be able to afford $100 a day in advertising, which can do wonders for some people. And I know others who, if they didn't buy a Rolex with diamonds on it, that would have been $30,000 in ads they could have just bought. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of ways.
Well, yeah. And people, if you're like, well, I can't afford $3,000 a month. We're not, I mean, I spend about $500,000 a month on Facebook ads. I'll just say that for the record. Do you think that I'm draining my bank account by $500,000 every month?
No, you understand your numbers.
No, I spend the money because more comes back. People are like, I can't afford these ads. Look, when you work with a guy like David, how long is somebody realistically going to maybe have to lose money while you optimize the campaign?
30 days. 30 days.
So that,
90, so, but now it's 30.
So if you set a budget of $100 a day on somebody's offer, mm-hmm. $3,000 a month, and it's not like they're going to make no sales, but they're going to be negative, below one ROAS for the month.
Let's just say they might be at break even, possibly slightly below. So you put 3,000 in, you might make 1,500 to 2,500 back.
Right. So you're out $500 to $1,500. What's the second month going to look like? Give me your worst performing client that still has a viable business. What did month two look like?
If they spent $3,000, they'd make $3,500, worst case.
Once again, that would be the second. Or do you have any clients that just hum along at that? You know, that's what, about 101.1, 1.2 ROAS?
Yeah, actually. My client that spends almost $400,000 a month operates a very successful business at a 1.3.
So they spend 400, they make 520 roughly.
Basically. Now, here's the caveat for everyone who's like, that's not that great.
Well, first of all, it is. $120,000 a month is a lot of money.
That's a lot. And even with a team of 10, that's still great.
Yeah.
Here's the
hey, everybody, part. $5,000 a month to keep 60 for yourself.
Thank you. Yeah. Exactly. And a lot of people making $5,000 a month would be ecstatic. That's another.
Totally.
So let's go beyond that. What do you think happens with all those buyers and leads they get that month? How much do you think they make in month two and three after it's all said and done?
Oh, wait, you mean we can monetize our list?
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds fun. That's free money. You mean I don't have to pay to reacquire those customers next time they buy?
No, and it just keeps happening every month. How weird is that? Yeah. So here's where people forget things, okay? You spend $400, you make $520. You're like, the return on ad spend is not that great. First off, BS. Because what you don't realize is that in month two, if we stopped everything, we actually did this as a test. We actually stopped ads for a complete month. All those leads then led to an extra $230,000 the next month. Mm. Oh, how about that? It looks like we just bumped the revenue now to $750.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what is the ROAS now? It's almost close to a two.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, what happens if we keep spending $400,000 a month and it rolls over and over and over? What happens if we do a launch? That's a lot of people we can send.
Yeah, you build up your list. I mean, by the way, if somebody's spending $400,000 a month, I don't know what they're selling. What's the price point on their front end offer?
So, front end offer, $47.
So, what are you spending? Like maybe $100 to acquire the customer?
Around that, yeah.
Okay, so $400,000. So they're acquiring 4,000 new customers per month.
Not including people who sign up for a freebie along the way.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some kind of opt-in before the sale. So they're getting 4,000 buyers. They might be getting 40,000 or 20,000 opt-ins.
People who don't buy get retargeted to a freebie. Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually direct to sale. After a certain period of time, we redirect them to something free. And then we, you know, educate them along the way to eventually buy something.
So then let's say in a year they decide to do a launch and they were getting 4,000 customers and 2,000 freebies, right? So after a year, 6,000, they have, 6,000 times 12, 72,000 effectively buyers, or two thirds of them are buyers that are just, and you do a launch. Let's say you launch a $200 course.
Oh my God.
What would your conversion be if you launched that $200, whatever, I don't know the niche, but $200 widget to your 72,000 person, how many of those do you think that list would buy?
Let's just say worst case scenario, you got 10%, because with a warm list, you can do higher than that. But let's just say hypothetically, it's 10%.
Yeah.
That's 7,200 buyers.
Times $200.
Times $200.
So that's $1.44 million.
Not that, including.
That's a $1.5 million launch you'll be able to do with zero acquisition costs after 1 year.
And just with the buyers. You're not even asking the freebie seekers to possibly buy something. We're just talking about the buyers. So,
Listen, this is me and David scratching the surface here. Like, we could geek out, seriously. We could get into like, okay, well, how are you segmenting the list? And like, what's the ascension model of the offer? And can we layer a continuity program on top? I mean, like, there's a lot we could do to squeeze all the juice out of this turnip here, but even just having this very superficial conversation, we're talking about how to make a couple million dollars a year. For someone.
Yeah. And
I hope this is landing with people. Oh, and by the way, you're talking about a hybrid model where you charge a percentage of ad spend or you charge a flat fee retainer aggregated across, sort of smeared across your whole business. What would you say is the average percentage of spend that you collect in fees between retainers and marginal payments? Is it close to 10, between 10 and 20%?
About 8 to 12. It's more like the 8 to 12%. And here's why: for anyone who's looking to go in the agency world, percentage of spend is usually an indicator that once you start to spend a lot, they're going to eventually cut you off, right? Because once you get to a point where things are working and you're spending 200K a month and they're giving you 20K, they're going to bring someone in and just say, run everything he's running. I'm just putting that out there. It does happen.
In other words, they're going to inherit all of your hard work as the agency.
They'll take the hit so that they can bring someone in for 5K a month, save a bunch of money, and just be like, run everything he was running. When you do a hybrid model where you're getting a piece of the action, it's performance based upon the fact that you have to generate the sale or else you don't get this bonus. Right. And bonus could be 10% of profit, which means you also have to keep in mind their cost of goods sold, you know, whatever other operational things they got to take care of, because you at the end of the day need to know how much are they making per product sold, right? And not just on the front end. We're talking the whole chain all the way to the back.
And there has to be a certain amount of trust and transparency in those relationships. Yeah,
a lot of contracts in place, right? A lot of things to make sure that everyone is in a win-win situation.
You have to like get added to their QuickBooks account kind of thing. So you can actually see what their profitability is.
Actually, that's funny that you mentioned that. If someone's using Stripe, PayPal, all that, I say, hey, I need user access to all of it.
Yeah.
I need to know exactly what's coming in, what's not. You can't just send me a spreadsheet because I can manipulate spreadsheets. Like, I need to know what's going on.
Right.
But you can imagine, hey, 8% is not bad when you're spending,
You're between 30 and 35 million a year. So that's between $2.5 and $3 million a year in agency fees that you're collecting. And I mean, I don't know, and you don't have to overshare about your internals of your agency, but like, it doesn't take a huge team to do what you do. It takes a smart team, but not a huge team.
Yeah, it's not a huge team. It's a smart team. So I have a team of 7 media buyers. I have 3 graphics people because, hey, man, you got to create graphics all the time.
Right.
I have a video editing team that I outsource to. So I only pay them 3K a month to edit a bunch of stuff, you know, personal content, client content and all that. So
and they do all your personal branding and content too.
Yep.
That's layered into that. Okay.
Yep. So they're an external part of my team, right? So if you want to actually include their team, they're a team of 10. So if we put all that together, that's 20 right there.
Yeah.
Right. They're not really my team. So they're,
but you're getting 10 people for $3,000 a month. So
yeah, which is insane.
We don't really count them. Yeah.
So I don't really count them, but if you look at the graphics people, my ad managers, myself, the editing team, and then you have the software that goes into like managing everything. I got a CPA. You know, like I have a lawyer that I pay. Like if you put all these people together, there's probably 15 people that I'm constantly involved with.
Right.
And then softwares and whatnot. So my overhead isn't small, but it's also very controlled, right?
Well, I mean, if you've got 15 people and some of them are just, they're just vendors, like a CPA. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't work for you full time, but.
No, I just talk to him every week, make sure everything's good, you know?
So you're bringing in $3 to $3.5 million a year. And, you know, again, you don't have to overshare. I'm just going to say, okay, 10 people, 15 people, let's say they average 60 or 70 grand a year per person. You're spending $1 million of that.
Yeah.
To run your business. Okay. So everybody's hearing, like, we're talking about a college kid that spent 10 years figuring some stuff out and focused on one platform, which is Facebook, which Instagram and Facebook are actually the same platform for anybody that doesn't know that, because Facebook bought Instagram and they merged the ad platforms. You know, a couple million bucks a year. And it's, you know, again, I'm not trying to pry. I'm just trying to shine a light for people on like, think about what most people do to hopefully retire someday when they're 65 years old. And, you know, I did a whole video on Instagram yesterday about this. The subject matter of the live was actually walking people through the math of what it would take to retire in 20 years from today. You know, let's say you've been making 80 grand a year, and that's the highest level. So conventional wisdom is that you would need 12 times your highest level of income to be able to retire comfortably.
Yeah.
That's without any anomalous unplanned expenses like a major medical mishap or a lawsuit or little Johnny has a drug problem and you got to pay 100 grand to go to rehab or whatever. Without any of that stuff, you need 12 times your highest level of income. So somebody's going, oh, I'm making 80 grand a year. I need $960,000. But yeah, but that's in today's dollars.
Yeah.
20 years from now, inflation basically doubles prices every 20 years. So that 960 is actually about 2 million.
Yeah.
So, and oh, by the way, if you're 80 grand, let's say you actually are going to creep up to 120 grand. Now you're talking about 12 times that is 1.4 times 2 in 20 years is 2.8. So now you need $3 million to retire. Except, wait a minute, what if little Johnny does need to go to rehab and 5 years from now you have to pull 100 grand out of the capital base?
Yeah.
Realistically, you probably need more like 5 to 10 million. Like, this is the baseline economic reality for everyone in this world. is that when you're 65, if you don't have $5 to $10 million, depending on how old you are now and how far out that is, you're probably not going to be able to retire at any level that gives anybody around you any confidence that they're not going to be having to take care of you when you get emphysema and you can't afford a nursing home, mm-hmm. you can't climb the stairs, and they're going to have to drag your ass into their house, and everybody's going to be put out. And it's going to, like, the quality of life that we all want, that we work so hard for when we retire, Done. It ain't happening for most people. You know who it is happening for? It's happening for David Schloss. It's happening for Jeff Lerner. It's happening for all 90 people that I've interviewed up to this point on Millionaire Secrets, and all 2,000 people that I will in the next 5 years. It's happening for digital entrepreneurs. That's why I say digital entrepreneurship is less risky than employment, because it's not happening for hardly any employees.
No.
And people are in delusion about that. They're in denial.
I'll put this in context too. You want to talk about a health scare and how much that costs. Okay. Yeah. I was in the hospital March of 2018 for 3.5 days, heart complications, overstressed. One of the things that happens when you're in business and don't know how to control yourself from dealing with too many personalities in business. More on that another time. When you're running an agency, you deal with a lot of people. So I took on way more business than I can handle. It took a toll on me. Mm-hmm. Diet went to shit. Health went to shit. Everything went to shit. I went to the hospital 3.5 days. If I didn't have insurance, that bill was over $80,000 for 3.5 days. Okay. Now, I know people who don't even have 80 grand in the bank, and they've been saving for 3 years or yep. 4 years or 5 years. I basically
or spent 20 years
or 20. I spent that in 3.5 days. Now, thank you, insurance, for covering 80% of that. But I still had to pay the other 20%. And I had 30 days to pay the 20%. Okay. So not many people would have been able to pay that. I, on the other hand, was like, cool, lesson learned. It's an expensive lesson. But it didn't bother me because I did the work. I understood the numbers on my own. Like, financially, I prepared for a health scare. I actually had money set aside that if God forbid something happened, it would come out of that and pay the thing. My buddy had his grandma get cancer. In 2 months, it cost 480 grand to take care of her.
Yep.
2 months. Okay. She ended up passing away. They still spent $500,000. She didn't have anything. It was gone. By the time it was all said, it was gone. They were taking money out of their own pockets to hopefully save her. Gone. Everything was gone. So you can imagine, like you said, 5 to 10 million, that's actually quite realistic that you need to achieve. I actually believe it's more towards the 10. Because
I totally do. Depending on if you live in, Kansas City, maybe it's closer to 5. You live in San Francisco, it's probably more like 20.
Yeah, it's more like 20.
I mean, in the last 6 years, I had both my wife's parents got cancer. And in both cases, we had, between roughly 8 to 10 month period where essentially – one of them actually moved in with me and my family took care of him. Nobody else was taking care of him.
Yeah.
She didn't have insurance. I paid for everything.
That's a lot.
And then 4 years later, her dad, same, got terminal cancer. He lived at home. I paid all his bills for the last 6 months. He couldn't work. Even now we're still arguing with the insurance company trying to get reimbursements 2 years after he died. I had to front all that. Listen, most people couldn't help. They'd have to watch the people they love die in wretched misery.
Yep.
Because they couldn't help.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks they're okay, but hey man, I'm 55 and I got 80 grand saved. It's all good.
No, that's gone in about a week. If you're in the hospital, that's gone in a week. It's gone.
And I don't know, so what's your, we veer off into some different territory here, but like, why don't they teach this stuff? It seems criminal to me that they hoodwink all of our youth into thinking that rack up student debt, get a job, work for 40 years, as if anybody works the same job for 40 years anyways, and don't worry, you'll be fine. It's a scam. How did we get here? What's your take?
So as someone who learned finance on their own, I'm one of the rare ones. I am the 1% if you think about it, right? I actually learned how to create a budget at 15. You know how rare that is for a teenager to be like, what's a budget? How do I make it? And then figured it out. And I truly believe that the reason why they don't teach this is because most of the teachers themselves didn't even learn these things, and they probably still don't even know it. they still don't know how to balance their own checkbook, or in this case, no checkbook, just balance their accounts, right? They don't understand how much is coming in versus how much is going out. They don't, because if they did, they would teach it. Even my own accounting teacher in college, like we actually had this whole conversation in the class, which was like, how is everyone financially from a sense of like, who's taking student debt, who's not, what's the difference in, you know, what's the asset and liability of our lives at the time? I remember everyone in the class had student debt, every single person, including the professor who was already a professor for 15 years, still had debt that they had not paid off.
Wow.
And even they couldn't answer questions on how much they had coming in versus going out. Because guess what? Someone like me and a couple friends of mine in that class were already business people. So if the professor themselves couldn't tell us they were making 5K and 4K was going out and they put X amount away, if they couldn't even tell that to us, we automatically knew something was wrong. Hmm. We just knew. And so you might think like, hey, that's a little harsh. Well, that's business people. It's going to be that way. If you don't know what's going in versus coming out, you got a problem. So this type of thing, like I'm going through this with my own son. He's 9 months old. You're like, how do you teach your 9 month old kid anything about finance? Easy. I put him on my lap, and when I'm looking at stock charts, I actually verbally say green means up, red means down. I'm drilling it in his head already. Green means up, money. Red means down, losing money. My friend's kid is eight years old. He already knows how to read a stock chart. The kid understands addition and subtraction more than most kids his age. Like he understands like, oh, this means we're going up, this means we're going down. Like the kid knows when to spend money, when not to, and he's 8 years old. And I know 20-somethings and 30-somethings who don't know how much money they have. So it's really just a matter of who's taking, once again, command. Who is the person who's taking command of the money that they're looking to earn? Not just they're earning, but looking to earn, right? What am I going to do in order to earn this amount? And what needs to be done in order to achieve that? It's not just the action. It's like, what happens when you get the money too? Yes, agency is making $3 million. You think I'm just banking it? No, still got taxes, still got to pay people. I don't live in Florida anymore. So income tax is now a thing, right? So I pay things now that I didn't have to pay before. And if I was stupid, I'd be the person at the end of the year who has a Lamborghini and a big ass house. And then at the end of the year, when I have to pay the tax bill, I don't have the money in the bank to pay the tax.
Yeah.
Because that happens to a lot of business people. And so I just think it's not taught because people aren't taught it themselves. It's just a generational thing, right? It's like, it's being passed down of lack of knowledge and information that it's like, you know what? You got to learn on your own. You're just going to have to learn it from experience. And that's unfortunate. You know, not many people are like me that just figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and the reality too, I mean, and I feel for teachers, you know, in so many ways, teaching in the modern world is kind of like, you know, it's fighting with one arm tied behind your back. But to me, one of the ways that it is so much that they're underpaid.
Yes.
They're put in a position of relatively helpless dependency for their retirement strategy, where it's all just, look, you're a part of a union. We handle it with a pension.
Yep. Work for 30 years.
You know, I mean, there's teachers retiring in the last 10 years that are still on these grandfathered, oh, you'll retire at 80% of your highest level of income for paid out for the rest of your life. That ain't how it works now.
No.
You're coming into the schools now. You're not put on that program. Because that program is not solvent, and it never was. And so the reality is, how can you ask those people to properly equip young people to have a progressive, you know, no BS financial strategy for their life that deals with the very hard truth? Think about it. You go to Merrill Lynch, you go to Edward Jones, you go to Charles Schwab and say, how much money do I need to retire? They're going to say, that number, I didn't make that number up. They're going to say roughly 12 times your highest level of income.
Yeah, that's an automatic. It's the base calculation everyone uses.
And that's like the minimum. That's, again, that's with no outlier expenses.
Yep.
And it's calculated in today's dollars, not the value of a dollar when you retire. So even if that's all we worked with, well, let's say you're going to work for 36 years for nice round numbers. In order to work for 36 years and get to where you have 12 times your highest level of income, you need to be saving the equivalent of a third of the highest level of income that you're ever going to earn every single year starting from day one.
That's so difficult for a lot
of people. Dude, nobody's anywhere close to this. So they're giving basic mass financial guidance to people who are plugged into a system that it is such a tiny sliver of people that are even remotely able to adopt the guidance. I feel like sometimes like the world is insane. People are running around acting like they're not already financial dead men walking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also the professions that once you're in it, like let's say teachers, right? When I lived in Florida, many of the teachers made between $40,000 and $50,000 a year if you were lucky, right? We're not even talking professors. Professors, where I was at when I went to the University of Florida, the professors were all making six figures, all of them. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. They were all also in their 50s, right? So they had been doing whatever they were doing for 20-something years. God knows how much debt they racked up having.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a PhD, you're paying off at least $250,000.
At least. Master's, doctorate, the whole deal. If you just go down the chain till they become a doctor or they're getting their PhDs, they were already $250,000 in debt at least. And I know they're making minimum payments and they might be making $100,000 to $150,000 as a professor. Now, yes, they're in college towns. Things are a little cheaper. I got that. But that's after 20 years of back and forth before they get to that type of salary. Now, what about the teachers that we all had back in the day where I had a teacher who was already a teacher for 28 years. She was already in her, you know, early 60s. She was already banking on her retirement. Like she was like, I'm ready for this thing to roll around. And what was interesting is I thought back then, I'm like, if you were only making $45,000 a year and you had to do this for 30 something years, I'm like, I know where you live because I live in the same city. There's no way you were affording what you believe you were affording in this area. There's no way because the houses are expensive and restaurants are expensive. Like everything's expensive around here. So I don't know how you were living on $45,000. Right. So I already knew that they were, you know, in a position that wasn't meant for winning unless they were doing something else. And you'll notice a lot of these teachers who are actually trying to make good money, they have to teach all year. They have to do the day teaching, the night teaching, summer school. They have to do, you know, AP or honor courses on top of that. Like they basically have to teach all day like an entrepreneur if you think about it. They have to go from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. teaching, then grading, and then all this other stuff just to maybe make 60 or 70 grand, right? And it's a lot of work for just that. And hey, you could do that as an entrepreneur too and work the same amount of hours, but at least then you're already home. Yes. At least then you don't have to grade papers, right? So there's
at least then you have the upside that you're not going to do all this work and hit a ceiling at 60 or 70 grand. You can do all this work and 2, 5, 8 years from now be making 600 grand.
Look at how much the demand is for tutors right now with COVID.
Oh, yeah. I just hired one. I just hired a teacher who makes, I can't remember, she makes $13 an hour.
Oh, my God.
She comes over to my house for a couple hours a day and makes almost to help our kids. And she makes almost as much in a couple hours a day, private homeschooling for us. She does work in a, you know, about 6-7 hour day at the school.
And at $13 an hour, they'd actually make more working for Amazon. They'd be making 15.
Or UPS, just delivering stuff.
Delivering stuff.
When you say it that way, it makes sense. Why that person, although now that she's hanging out in my world, I think she's going to, her worldview is going to change. But yeah. Absent that, why would she not be teaching kids about how they need to have $5 or $10 million to retire? Well, it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, because she doesn't know what it would be like to even have $5 or $10 million.
Yeah, it's like if she taught that, she'd just be depressed all the time because it's like, well, I'm not on that path, so I guess I'm screwed. Yeah.
But then you also have the entrepreneurs or the business owners that have made tons of money and they sold their businesses or whatever, who actually become a professor, and they actually do teach these things. But you don't hear about it very often in the US. You actually hear about it more in like Europe, where it's like a very big business person. You know, they made their tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars. And next thing you know, in their 50s and 60s, they're actually a professor at a major university teaching economics, accounting, marketing, business, because they've done exactly what they wanted to do. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to bring it back into the world and teach the younger generation how to do that too. It doesn't happen very often around here. You wouldn't see Elon Musk anytime soon teaching at a university until maybe he's maybe 60 or 70, right? It's not going to happen, but he's a visionary. He has a plan and he's going to keep doing what he's doing and make his billions of dollars because he wants to change the world, right? But that's the perfect example. He's a perfect example of someone who didn't know how to use money properly. I mean, he was in debt for so long,
right?
Slept on people's couches, even though he was worth a couple billion dollars. You're like, how is that possible? It's in stock, people. It takes some time to sell off that stock when you're a business owner. It actually takes quite a bit of time. You know, even when your stock's at an all-time high, you can't just dump it and then just take it home. It takes time before it processes. So just because the guy was worth a lot of money didn't mean he didn't struggle with money on his own. It's not what he had in the bank. And up until recently, he was struggling too, right? So even big-time business people have issues with interpreting how to use their money, when to use it, when to put things away. Not many people are Warren Buffett or Bezos or Gates, for that matter, when it comes to like, it's just so much money, they don't know what to do with it, right?
Yeah, but the thing I want people to hear, though, with what you're saying is, you know, Buffett, Gates, Bezos, Musk, you know, they're not the only people that are going to be okay. Like, the teacher, let's say there's a teacher hearing this who's like, hasn't actually turned it off by now because they're so livid that we're, you know, whatever, saying.
Don't like the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, but what I would say to that teacher is, look, I'm not saying don't teach. I'm saying that instead of trying to make up that differential by doing extra teaching or teaching summers or tutoring, although hopefully my teacher's not hearing me say this. The
we need hired. The tutors. Yeah.
She's young. I'll help you out. Just stick with me. You'll be good. But the solution is start a digital side hustle. Go online. Like, that's the thing you can do. And as people are like, well, I can't get a second job because my work will find out, or my students will see me waiting tables at Applebee's. No, I'm not saying do that. I'm saying the internet is the solution. It's the internet or real estate. Honestly, in my world, don't go trade crypto. Don't go get involved in a CBD MLM. The internet or real estate. Anybody in this world who is not side hustling one of those two things, unless you're already on a path to what most people consider massive wealth. Yeah. I don't consider $10 million massive wealth, but most people do. Unless you're already on an outlier path, you got to have a side hustle. And I would recommend digital business and or real estate. Personally, I do both. Yeah. Listen, if everybody that hears this, you know, cut all the, you know, but boil all the water out of the pan in this conversation. If somebody comes away with this and goes, man, I need a side hustle. And by the way, managing Facebook ads could be a really great side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Because 10 years into it, this guy's pulling down a couple million a year. How much are you making 10 years into your job? I'll tell you a stat. Here's a statistic for you. The average Harvard graduate, 12 years after graduation, earns $84,000 a year.
Oh my God.
That's carrying the debt load from a Harvard education, mind you.
Which is about 50K a semester.
Yeah. So that's 200K just for a bachelor's. And you're making 84 grand a year in your mid 30s after you graduated from Harvard. Guys, the world's broken. The world's broken. It's not breaking. It's not flexing. It's not fraying at the edges. It's straight broken. Mm-hmm. Hear it now. Don't make it so that you got to hear it 10 more times before you take action on it. Anyway, David, man, we could talk about this all day. I know we could. Fortunately, we both have other cool things to do. So I'm gonna say let's wrap. This has been like, I'm super fired up, man. I'm so ready to go do all the other work I have to do today. I'm just grateful that you came on the show and we got to reconnect. Let the world know, man, if they want to hire you for Facebook ads, or B, if they just want to go get deeper into your world and learn more about you, where should they go?
So if you want to get consulting or done for you management of your ads, you go to convertroi.com. Okay. That's the agency. My team and I will help you. We'll scale your business. That's what we do best. If you want to learn how to do all this stuff and you're tired of scrolling through YouTube, reading and watching tons of stuff that don't make sense, you can go to clicksconversionsclients.com and you'll see a nice course coming out that will teach you everything I know about Facebook and Instagram ads. And if you do that, I will make it as simple as possible for you to launch your first campaign within a couple days. I guarantee it. From the day you start to a couple days later, you will have a campaign out there. So once again, Convert ROI, if you need some help, clicksconversionsclients.com if you want to learn how to do it yourself. Or you could follow me on social media. Just look for David Schloss. I'm the one with the blue check.
Cool. Yeah, we'll put all those links in the description wherever this appears, both on YouTube and on the podcast platforms. Man, thank you. I want to let everybody know too. We put a page together. If you go to millionairesecrets.com/David S, obviously Millionaire Secrets is the name of the show, millionairesecrets.com/David S. You can download a free copy of my very short, very easy to read digital book called The Millionaire Shortcut. It's the fastest way to become a millionaire in the new economy, which if you do what I tell you, you could well end up hiring David to run the ads. And you can subscribe to the YouTube channel and listen to the podcast from there. Anyways, David, this has been tremendous, man. Thanks again for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Really appreciate it.
Of course. And thank you everyone out there listening and watching. We will see you on the next episode of Millionaire Secrets. Take care.
You just finished this episode of the Millionaire Secrets podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like and share this episode and do leave us a review. Let us know how we impacted you today. Your next step toward creating your awesome life is to join me and thousands of others in the Entre Nation community, where you'll receive free training, networking with other awesome life seekers, access to live events, discounts, merchandise, and other awesome perks. Head over to www.entrenation.com. That is www.entrenation.com, and join us today. And of course, do please follow me on social media. I can be found on all the major social networks at Jeff Lerner Official. Thank you again for listening, and please go be awesome.